Hello, and welcome to Literary Lunch, a light lunch for your literary appetite. I'm Eli, and this is my co-host, V.
Yes, I have finally replaced Beth and found a co-host who sounds identical.
Hush. Just so no one's confused, it's still me. It's just that I finally came out to my family as non-binary. I like they-them pronouns, and I'm going by Eli.
And now comes the part where Eli write something silly and offbeat for me to say as we transition into the intro. Oh God, wait. Am I just a character in this podcast? Quick, Eli, write me younger, cuter, and less depressed. Quick.
You literally wrote half of this. I'm just as much a character as you are.
I can't have this kind of power, Eli. It'll go to my head. Next thing you know, I'll write a tangent about a taxi driver who wants to kill his wife.
This whole thing is already a tangent. We're supposed to be introducing the story.
What better introduction can we give than confusing the hell out of people?
Very true. Today, we're discussing the story Rosalie Goes Off to Die by Daniel Kelman. It's a little surreal, a little absurd, and a whole lot of fun.
Buckle up, munchies.
Content warning, though, throughout this whole story and a little later on in our discussion for mentions of suicide and ideation.
And now for the synopsis.
We are introduced to the character of Rosalie, a 70-year-old German schoolteacher who's just found out she's going to die in a few weeks from terminal cancer. So she goes home, calls an assisted suicide company in Zurich, and makes an appointment to see them the next week. She spends the time until her appointment day arrives talking to friends, thinking about all the things she won't have to worry about when she's gone, and bargaining with the author to write her a different ending.
When she leaves for her appointment, things start to devolve. She keeps badgering the author not to write her into the situation, so he makes her taxi arrive at the airport in record time. And every time her plane is grounded, her train is stalled, or her driver drops her off at the wrong address, things get a little weirder. Finally, when she's in the elevator going to her final appointment, the author writes himself into the story, makes her young and beautiful and healthy, and declares that the story doesn't matter because nothing does.
This is one of those stories that's really hard to get a feel for just from a synopsis, so definitely check out the anthology Fame and give it a read.
Now for the lightning round review.
Do we exist? The very first question every philosopher asks.
Well, according to academic sources on this topic, such as the movie The Matrix.
V, that's not an academic source.
Wake up, Eli, we are living a lie!
Ah, to be young once more. You know what they say, youth is wasted on the young.
Now my joints just crackle and pop like Rice Krispies.
You are literally 23.
Hey, they actually do. I should get that checked out, though, to be fair.
Man, my author must be a total asshole. I'm broke, mentally ill, and on year two of my career crisis.
Good thing I'm in school to be an editor, babe, because I'll fix it all up as soon as I get this degree.
Aww,
I love you.
I love you too.
And now for the discussion. The first theme from the story that we'd like to discuss is the portrayal of old age versus youth. We found a quote that illustrates one of the differences between the two in this story. Eli, would you like to read the quote?
That's exactly why, thinks Rosalie, everyone likes that eccentric detective Miss Marple. She's the absolute incarnation of unreality. Old women don't solve murders. They're not interested in the world, and they no longer have any desire to understand events. Every woman who hasn't got there yet thinks she's going to be different, just as we did too. So, with the caveat that I have not ever, to my knowledge, been an old woman in her 70s, I feel like I can say this doesn't seem super realistic. Like, if old people were entirely checked out of society, we wouldn't have elected Donald Trump.
I mean, I think I would regret a lot of things about my life if I ended up further down the line and I wasn't interested in the world and had no desire to understand events. That sounds like, to me, that sounds like a miserable life. And yeah, every person has major regrets about their life. I would never want to get to that point. I think I'd have, you know, more regrets. Like, that, there would have to be a lot of regret for me to be that disinterested in life, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. And it kind of makes me think that Rosalie's story isn't just about the fight for life. It's about her realizing how stagnant her life has become and wanting to change that.
Yeah, and old age in this story is a writer's tool, right? Like,
right.
Time is linear, whatever, you're going to get old, you're going to die. That's a given, pretty much. But in this story, it's not. And old age is equated with Rosalie's state of being stagnant. Whereas when she goes backwards to youth in the end, it's like she's allowed to jump out of there, you know?
Yeah.
With like fresh eyes and like, you know, a wide smile. And it's like almost selling old people a little short, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'll have to check back in like 50 years and see how we're doing.
Yeah, we'll do like a comeback episode, like when bands get back together. Speaking of, when is One Direction getting back together?
Are they getting back together?
No, but they should. Or do you think the world's done with that?
I don't know. We always need more teeny bopper songs. Oh my God, I'm such an old person.
That's true. Teeny bopper song.
I'm a freaking
amazing.
Oh,
that
was
actually perfect. All right. But then there's also that adage at the same time that youth is wasted on the young. This woman once said to me, "Honey, you have more of your life ahead of you than behind you. I have more of my life behind me than ahead of me, and I'm okay with that." And no one had ever put it that way to me before, and it was just an interesting way to look at it. I'd never thought of it like that, and it really made me think about dividing one's life into sections and saying like, oh, this, because essentially what she was saying to me is, oh, this is your time to make mistakes. And this is your time to fight through those mistakes. Because then when you're my age, you get to look back at them.
In this story, old age and death and youth and life are just really tightly woven together. And obviously, since this is a story about a woman begging for her life and really resisting the idea of assisted suicide as the only option ahead of her, life and death are really major themes in this story.
The story's explanation of life and death as Rosalie lobbying for her life to the writer really, really made me think of it as her cancer being a way of explaining suicidal ideation. In this analogy, there's a sense of impending doom that is festering and the person experiencing, and this is coming from a close friend of mine who's talked to me about this, the person experiencing it, and this is how she experienced it, you know, is fighting for her life and fighting for herself to make it all the time, fighting very hard. And that's how she explained it to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously everyone experiences it differently, but that was like one account of it that I heard that the story reminded me of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really well encapsulated by one of my favorite quotes in the whole story. "Our bodies are strong and the will to live more powerful than we suppose in the dark nights of the soul." That kind of clinical depression is just as much a disease as cancer is. And not every person survives battling every disease.
Yeah, and not every disease manifests physically on the body. And then the next thing we wanted to talk about, too, is the writer in the story.
And since the voice is such a crucial part of this story, we thought it would be fun to do a little dialogue between the author and Rosalie. We've put it together with some of our favorite quotes that we think really show the essence of the story without being too long. "Rosalie, what's happening to you here is what you're for. That's why I invented you. Theoretically, maybe, I suppose I could intervene, but then the whole thing would be pointless. In other words, I can't."
Get on and do something. Spoil your story. Who is going to care? There are so many stories. It is not all about just one. You could make me better again. You could even make me young. It wouldn't cost you a thing.
You're clutching at the illusion that you really exist, but you're made of words, vague images, and a few simple thoughts, and they all belong to other people. You think you're suffering, but nobody's suffering here because nobody's here.
You and your clever words. You can stick them up your ass.
Please, pull yourself together.
No, I won't. I hurt. One day it'll happen to you too, and someone will tell you that you don't exist.
So as you can see from that little snippet, Rosalie spends a good chunk of the story trying to convince the author that his idea of how the story should go is not more important than her pain. But from his point of view, there has to be pain for there to be a story. And why should she suffer any less than any number of characters in any number of stories? She's not even real.
What ultimately convinces the author to grant Rosalie's wish isn't actually empathy or compassion or goodwill. It's a selfish choice made in the hope that the author of his story might spare him one day.
Yeah, that's really well embodied by this quote. And Rosalie, she goes down the street, taking great strides, half unconscious with euphoria. And for a moment, I feel I've done the right thing, as if mercy were all important and one story less didn't matter. And at the same time, I have to confess, I have an absurd hope that someone someday will do the same for me.
I think there's something really magical about that moment of humanity where, like, he's been a god all along. He's been, you know, controlling the story all along. And at the last minute, when you think it doesn't matter, when you think he's telling her she's nothing, he's telling her pain is what it is, that something... the threads come apart just a little, just enough for some of his humanity to show. And like, that is the brightest light that makes all the difference. You know, he allows her to be young again. He allows her to walk away and live. And isn't that, you know, isn't that what we would all hope for in this magical world on our deathbeds, that you could just get up, you know, knowing what you know now? And you're going to run down the street young again, and life is ahead of you again rather than behind you, you know?
And the author's struggle with his character is, in a lot of ways, his struggle with himself and with the idea that maybe he's just somebody else's idea. But if he doesn't listen to Rosalie, if he ignores her and treats her as just one of his ideas, just a part of his story, then that leaves all the more room for him to think of himself that way, as just a piece of someone else's story. Like he says, "For like Rosalie, I cannot imagine that I'm nothing if I'm not being observed by somebody else, and that my only half-real existence ends the moment that somebody takes his eyes off me, just as, now that I'm finally ending this story, Rosalie ceases to exist."
That is like some weird, that has got to be some weird version of like solipsism or something. And I'm bad at philosophy, so I probably used the wrong word there, but it's definitely interesting how, like, one of the things that I think he's getting at is that we all exist because we know each other to exist.
Yeah.
In a way. So it's like, it's this web of interconnected existence. And like, what if everyone looked away one day, you know? That sounded smart when I said it.
Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. I want to give special thanks to podcast supporter Laura, who was kind enough to recommend this story to us. Thank you, Laura. We absolutely enjoyed it. And we just had such a blast discussing it. And we actually had to cut out like half of the quotes we tried to put in here. So V, what are we rating this story?
5 non-existent sandwiches out of 5 non-existent sandwiches.
Oh, are the sandwiches metaphorical? Or are they invisible? What's going on here?
All of the above. They are both old and young. Right, they are both freshly picked sandwiches off the sandwich tree and aged moldy sandwiches. They are everything. 5 out of 5.
Well, on that bizarre note,
follow us on Twitter at LitLunchCast. Go to our website at literarylunchpodcast.wordpress.com and support us at our Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/literarylunch. Bye, munchies! Munch, 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 munch. What's wrong with me?